Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Fires left side, get a man there, Stevie catch, touchdown!
To being able to go out there and move, you know what I'm saying, get the herky jerk back.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Inside the 10, 5-yard line, touchdown, C.J. Spiller!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO. Tonight, joining Murph in studio is Mr. Big Stuff himself, Marcel Darius. A checkup of Jets minicamp with Eric Allen from Jets.com. And a look inside Tim Tebow with the guy who wrote the book with him, Nathan Whitaker. That and your phone calls tonight on The John Murphy Show.
This place is pandemonium!
Touchdown!
From One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
In the studio, inside One Bills Drive, we're ready for another 2 hours of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Thank you very much for tuning in tonight, whether it's via radio or somewhere on the internet. Maybe you tuned in on the podcast after the fact. We welcome you to the show. We think we got some good stuff going on here tonight. You heard some of it right there, and going to talk a lot about today's day two of the Bills' mandatory minicamp. Everybody here for the minicamp, except, of course, for Jarris Bird. We're going to get through what went on here today at the minicamp as the shape of the Bills forms right before our eyes. Beautiful day outside today to watch the afternoon practice. 2:45 until about 4:20 in the afternoon. The Bills on the field for the better part of 2 hours, and they have meetings all day long, walkthroughs for some of them in the morning, and then on the field in the afternoon. One more day of that. The routine switched up a little bit tomorrow with a morning practice for the Bills, 9:45 in the morning, and then a couple of meetings after that, and then they will scatter. Tomorrow, the last day until training camp, now just over 6 weeks away. Last day on the field tomorrow for the Buffalo Bills. So we want to get the thoughts from you as the Bills approach training camp on the face of this Bills franchise. The face, as we said, the team taking shape, but the face of the franchise. Who is the face of the Buffalo Bills franchise? Think about the NFL a little bit. Some teams have a defined identity. The New England Patriots, Tom Brady, the face of the franchise. The Baltimore Ravens, the Super Bowl champions, you'd have to say Ray Lewis has been the face of their franchise for more than a decade. That's going to change now. Some teams don't have that face. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to name the face of the Miami Dolphins franchise. The New York Jets, face of the franchise, I guess the coach, Rex Ryan, for as long as that lasts. You know, the Cleveland Browns, there's no face of the franchise. Denver, Manning, you know, face of the franchise. Cowboys, you would think Tony Romo, face of the franchise. The Giants, Eli Manning. Who's the face of the Buffalo Bills franchise right now? And who do you think it will be moving forward? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Who is the one guy that fans around the country see and they immediately identify them as, boom, he's with the Buffalo Bills? Who is it? Is it C.J. Spiller with the Pro Bowl appearance last year? Is it Stevie Johnson? He's got a pretty high profile around the league. Is he the face of the franchise? Is it E.J. Manuel, rookie quarterback who has yet to take a snap in the NFL? Maybe he is the face of the franchise. Maybe the face moving forward. Is it new head coach Doug Marrone, yet to coach a game in the NFL? Is he the face of the Bills franchise? Is it Mario Williams, one of the highest paid players in the game? Is he the guy that people think of when they think Buffalo Bills? I mean, we're talking about the identity of the team, the identity which obviously is in flux now with a new coaching staff and a new football department taking shape, new general manager, new scouts, new coaching staff, several new players. It's going to be a new quarterback on the field from a year ago. But the question is, right now, who is the face of the Buffalo Bills? And who do you think it will be moving forward? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can always reach us and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Maybe it's Marcel Darius, the defensive lineman, big man in the middle. He's going to be joining us a little bit later on this hour right here in the studio. He's come up with a new song to be played when he gets a sack. 5.5 sacks in each of his first two seasons in the NFL. We'll talk with Marcel about how many sacks he's looking to get and about this new song. Mr. Big Stuff, Marcel Darius, joins us in just a few minutes here on the show. A lot of attention still focused on Tim Tebow out there in New England and Foxborough right there. at their mini camp this week. We're going to talk at 8 o'clock with a man who wrote a book with Tebow. Pretty popular book, too. It's called Through My Eyes. It came out over a year ago. And Nathan Whitaker co-authored the book with Tim Tebow. We want to get some insight into kind of what makes Tebow tick, why he does have is held in such high regard by so many people all over the country, and how he handles situations like New England this year, like the Jets last year, like his immediate success with the Denver Broncos a couple of years ago. Nathan Whitaker, who's written several books, including a couple with Tony Dungy, has also wrote the book with Tim Tebow that came out over a year ago, Through My Eyes, and we'll talk with Nathan Whitaker tonight at 8 o'clock. And an update on the New York Jets from Eric Allen, who is a lead writer, the senior writer for Jets.com. He'll be joining us as the Jets go through their mini camp this week. And the Jets trying to identify who their quarterback's going to be. Is it Geno Smith? Is it Mark Sanchez? We'll talk with Eric Allen about that. So that's what's coming up on the show tonight. Again, we would like your input as soon as you can. The phone line's open right now. Who is the face of the Buffalo Bills franchise right now? Who is it? Spiller, Johnson, Mario Williams, Kyle Williams, for that matter, Doug Marone, E.J. Manuel. Who do you think is the one person that people around the country think of, the one player that they think of, or coach, when they think of the Buffalo Bills? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The franchise, the team, out on the practice field alongside the Healthy Zone Fieldhouse today for day two of the mini camp. Beautiful day, sunshine, temperature in the low to mid-70s. Great day for football, and the Bills put on quite a defensive show. For the most part, for the second day in a row, the defense was ahead of the offense during today's mini camp session. Some of the highlights that we saw today in the teamwork, Kevin Cobb would get the initial snaps, splitting them fairly evenly with E.J. Manuel, as it turns out. Jeff Toole, the third quarterback, got a couple of snaps, but not too many in one of the middle team sessions. In the early team session, Kevin Cobb tried to hook up with T.J. Graham on a pass downfield. Beautiful pick by Stephon Gilmore, who went up high and brought it down. Just a great play by Stephon Gilmore. That play may have set the tone for the rest of the day, because there were several big plays by the defense and the secondary today. Gilmore later on 9-on-7 with a great pass breakup. During the second teamwork session, E.J. Manuel tried to hit Marquise Goodwin along the sideline. The pass was tipped, and it was intercepted by Aaron Williams. An outstanding play by Aaron Williams along the sideline. In the third team session, a lot of read option runs and a strong run by Zach Brown, the former Pittsburgh running back who arrived on the scene late last year trying to win a roster spot as a backup running back. Nice runs by Zach Brown. And again, there was another interception in the third team session, a tip pass from Kevin Cobb that was picked up by Nickell Roby, who is a undrafted rookie free agent out of USC. You get the sense here what was going on? It was a big day for the defense. The Bills wrapped up the practice with two-minute drill, a start at the 35-yard line, and neither one of them were successful on the offensive side of the ball. There was one good play, Kevin Cobb with a scramble and a pass down the right sideline, found Fred Jackson, who picked up around 20 yards and a first down. But first down at the 40-yard line, and then the troubles began. Cobb was sacked by Jerry Hughes coming off the edge, one of those hybrid pass rushers the Bills have coming off the edge. Next play, another sack on a blitz by the Bills defense. The next play, third play in a row, another sack. This one, it looked like Kiko Alonso and Jerry Hughes with the sack. And of course, these are not take him to the ground sacks. These are tap him sacks. And then the fourth sack in a row, this one from defensive back Duke Williams, the rookie. Four straight sacks during the two-minute drill when Kevin Cobb had him in there. E.J. Manuel not able to get much done in his set in the two-minute drill as well. So it was defense leading the way for the Bills, really, for the second straight day at today's minicamp. Nathaniel Hackett, the Bills' new offensive coordinator, met with the media afterward and talked about the fact that the defense got the better of his unit much of the day today.
I'm glad Coach Pettine's on our team, that's for sure, and all those guys that they have out there. Anytime you're playing a defense like we're facing every single day, it's going to be a roller coaster of emotions. I mean, they're bringing everybody from every place, and you have to do your best to try to get a foundation and make things happen. And there's some things that do good, and other things that you're just putting your hand on top of your head and just trying to get to the next play.
Yeah, they tried to, but it was a problem for the offense, especially during that two-minute drill at the end of the practice today. The Bills, of course, as we all know, have Stevie Johnson and then a young, untested group of receivers other than Brad Smith. Nathaniel Hackett talked about that, the fact that he's got really an inexperienced young group of receivers behind Stevie Johnson and Brad Smith.
Young means that they're fresh and excited and they're hungry and they want to get out there, and that's all we can ask. And they're doing everything we're asking them to do, and they just got to keep getting better and better.
You feel like there's some talent to work with.
Yeah, there's a lot of fast guys out there, and a lot of guys that can get off press. It's great to have Stevie Johnson out there again, and Brad Smith, TJ Graham's done a good job. All of them are coming along.
Nathaniel Hackett, he also talked a little bit about the offensive line. As you know, the Bills are trying to find the replacement for Andy Levitre at left guard. They have had Colin Brown get a lot of first-team reps over the last few practices now at the end of the OTAs and through the first 2 days of this minicamp. Of course, they acquired Doug Legursky, the veteran from the Pittsburgh Steelers last week. He slowly is beginning to get into the lineup, mostly working with the twos, the second-teamers. Nathaniel Hackett talked about Legursky and whether he will eventually replace Colin Brown at that left guard spot.
I'll tell you, Colin's done a nice job. Doug's just kind of been inserted in there, and we want to see what he can do. I think because he's just come in these last couple days, we want to get a nice evaluation on him. So even at that left guard spot, that's open. I mean, everything's pretty much open on the offense. I mean, it's a brand new offense with everybody, and we want to make sure that we get the right guys in there at the right time.
Especially at left guard, I think that is a work in progress and something to keep an eye on moving forward. Another day on the sidelines for Leotis McKelvin, the Bills' veteran defensive back, signed a new contract this year, premier return man in the National Football League, punt return man, and probably penciled in to be the number two corner opposite Stephon Gilmore. We talked with Leotis McKelvin this week and asked him about his timetable for recovery from the late season surgery last year.
Right now, you know, I'm getting better and better. I'm close to a return. Just trying to go out there, you know, make sure I don't have any kind of, like, you know, setbacks and things like that. And I'm getting better and better every day, every week. So it's just a little time thing. I'm about probably 80-85% right now, working on getting to 100.
Leotis desperately wants to get in. I know you can see him on the sidelines trying to jump into some of the drills. He has not been in the teamwork, but is getting work in some of the defensive drills. Leotis got the new contract over the winter. He did not hit the free agent market and gets a new opportunity here to demonstrate that he can play cornerback after being in and out of the lineup at cornerback for the first 4 years of his NFL career. Former first-round draft pick out of Troy University. We asked Leotis about his new contract and the new opportunity that is presented to him here with the Bills this year.
I mean, every year is almost like a fresh start. You know, every year you're going to have your opinion on what happened to you last year, but, you know, every year always a new year. You know, just you got to get prepared for it, get mentally prepared, physically prepared for it, and just go out there and just play ball.
Do you feel at this stage of your career, you have started a corner before, but you feel like you're better equipped now to be a starting corner than maybe you have been through your time here?
Oh, most definitely. You know, I'm older. You know, I got a lot of playing experience out on the outside, inside. I've been moved around. I've been down in the bottom of the totem pole, all the way to the top. You know, I've been all over the place. But right now, you know, I'm at a spot in my career that it's time for me to step up, finish off my career on a strong note.
Leotis McKelvin, I asked Mike Patton, the defensive coordinator, today about, you know, I was asking, does Leotis just walk in and reclaim the number two cornerback spot when he's healthy? And Patton wouldn't say that, but he did sort of indicate that they are waiting and patiently waiting, knowing that Leotis is coming off the surgery, but waiting for him to get back healthy and probably going to be the start of training camp for him. And then hopefully they can pencil him in to the number two cornerback spot. At the moment, they're running through, Ron Brooks is getting work over there. Justin Rogers getting work over there. Cresdon Butler, a lot of different players over there at the other cornerback spot opposite Stephon Gilmore. So that's the story from the Bills minicamp today. One more day, 9:45 in the morning tomorrow. We'll have a recap on that, and we can talk. If you have any questions about what's going on at minicamp, you can give us a call. We also want to know who is the face of the franchise for the Buffalo Bills. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, the number's a call. Just a couple of other notes, league notes. Tavares Jackson, cut by the Bills Monday, expected to sign a deal with the Seattle Seahawks, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. Seahawks offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel, a big fan of Tavares Jackson. He started there in 2011, lost his job to Russell Wilson last summer, came to the Bills in the trade before the start of last season, and then never saw the field. He was designated third quarterback all season long. Just cut Monday by the Bills. The report is he is likely to sign with Seattle. I just checked the NFL transaction wire before we came on the air. That transaction had not been posted yet. Washington Redskins with a transaction involving Buffalo native Doug Worthington, the defensive end, the former draft pick out of Ohio State. He has been released. He's waived injured, according to the Redskins. Worthington suffered an injury to his biceps tendon that could require surgery to repair. Doug Worthington, St. Francis Athol Springs product, Ohio State product, waived injured by the Washington Redskins today. And the Redskins also signed kicker John Potter, who came to the Bills last year, drafted by the Bills, tried out with the Redskins the last couple of days, 6 weeks on the Bills roster as the kickoff specialist last year, 13 touchbacks in his 24 kickoffs. He was subsequently cut by the Bills, and John Potter has been signed by the Washington Redskins. All right, let's get to your phone calls, your thoughts on who is the face of the Bills franchise. Easy for some teams, easy to say Tom Brady, Patriots, Peyton Manning, Broncos, Eli Manning, New York Giants. It had been easy for a long time to say Ray Lewis, Baltimore Ravens, Tony Romo, Dallas Cowboys. But who is the face of the Bills franchise going into this year, and who will it be in the future? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can always follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Here's a call from Tom in Niagara Falls. Hello, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, I just got my vote. It's C.J. Spiller, and I would just kind of like the Bills. I don't know. Maybe I'm living a couple years in the past here. I want them to sign Vontae Leach because, if I'm not mistaken, isn't he like one of the better fullbacks in the league? And, you know, Spiller's our best player, and if you could get someone to make him even better, I just think that would be fantastic. I'm not sure if we still have Corey McIntyre or not.
No, Corey McIntyre not on the roster. He was a
free agent. I didn't think so.
Yeah, they didn't sign him. Yeah, Vontae Leach is out there, just released by the Baltimore Ravens. Having watched a lot of what they've done in these practices, I don't really see a role for the fullback. I think going into these practices, I thought there would be in this offense, but I don't see – it doesn't look like they've constructed a role for a classic blocking fullback in this offense, at least yet. I mean, that could change, but right now it doesn't appear that that's the case. A vote for C.J. Spiller as the face of the franchise. We got a couple of tweets on this year. Charlie Oswald tweets in, I think after this year it will be C.J. Spiller. Nick Degnan tweets in, as of now, the Bills are in that group of faceless franchises. It's up to EJ to change that going forward. Probably true. And that's why it's difficult, I think, to identify who's the face of the Bills franchise. They're not the only ones that you'd have problem identifying that. I think, in fact, half of the teams in the NFL, you'd have trouble saying who's the face of the franchise. I think it's a legitimate question. A tweet from Nick who says, no matter who I speak to, they all comment. Oh, he says, I live in Southern California. No matter who I speak to, they all comment that C.J. Spiller is amazing. Moving forward, it should be C.J., Manuel, and Johnson. Those would be the big three, I would guess. C.J. Spiller, E.J. Manuel, and Stevie Johnson as far as face of the franchise. Dave and Clarence, your thoughts on this issue. Thanks for coming on the air with us, Dave.
So I was going to agree with C.J. Spiller. I think he had a great interview on national television after the game against the Dolphins last year on that Thursday night game. Very, very good football player, incredibly quick. I think they show him during the pregame show whenever the Bills are playing, and just seems to be a great person. Yeah, he's a great face of the franchise, great football player who also happens to be a good person.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I agree with virtually everything you say there. I agree. You know, what a great draft pick that is. I mean, and think about that, how the Bills were criticized, Buddy Nix in particular, about you don't need a running back. What a great draft pick that was, C.J. Spiller. Did they need a back? Was that a pressing need then? No, but he is a special player. He is a dynamic player. He is a good person, as you point out, Dave. He is, better than good person. I think he is an inspiration to his teammates, how talented he is and how good he is. Just a good-hearted guy. And I think, in retrospect, just a great draft pick for the Bills, one that was criticized even as late as last year. Al in North Tonawanda, you're on the air. Good evening, Al. Welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Okay.
I think we got to wait the season's half over before we pick the face of the Bills.
Okay.
And I think the question is this: Jeff Kuhl, the other quarterback, do you think he'll be a number three active, or will he be cut and put on a practice squad from what you're seeing?
Very good question. You know, just now this week with Deveris Jackson gone, Kuhl is beginning to get more reps. I think he took a handful of reps in one of the team sessions today. And I like what I see. I can see what the Bills like about Tool, the quarterback from out west, the undrafted free agent. He's good size, seems to have quick release. He does not look out of place in the minimum, the minimal reps that I've seen him get so far. The question, do they keep him active as a third quarterback? Good question. I don't know. What do they do with kickers? Do they you know, they keep two kickers as they started last season with. That would impact what you do with quarterbacks. It does not appear that this year that they're going to have they have any interest in having Brad Smith on the roster as a third quarterback. Brad Smith gets all of his reps at wide receiver right now. That could change, obviously, moving forward. So in the past, you know, two active Sunday quarterbacks and Brad Smith was your emergency guy. But it does not appear they're leaning in that direction. So I don't know. I will say, through the last couple of days, I've been very impressed with Jeff Toole as far as having the skills for the job, the way he throws the ball, his quick release, his good size. You know, very early in the process, I have to say I'm fairly impressed with him. Jim in Buffalo. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Murph. Listen, I just wanted to make a comment about Marcell Dareus. I just have a feeling we haven't seen the best of that guy and everything, you know. And I was wondering, here's my question. Do you think this could be his breakout year? I mean, the first year was his rookie year, and the second year with his brother. I'm sure that, like, kind of spread his energies out. So what do you think about this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest with you, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to get him on the show tonight, that and the debut of his sax song. Because, you know, there's no question his season was derailed last year when he had the tragedy at home with his younger brother. His season was derailed. And you know, there's no one among us who would not be distracted by a tragedy like that. And he certainly was. And we'll ask him that question. I think, you know, from having talked to him about it a couple of times, he will admit that that set him back for a while. And if you look at his arc of production last season, as things went along, as the season moved along, Marcell Dareus got better. He had some pretty good games down the stretch, the game in Foxborough, the game in Miami, second to last week of the year. He blocked a kick in the season finale against the Jets. His season got better as it went along last year, indicative, I think, of the distraction that the tragedy at home back in Alabama caused him. We'll get to the guy himself, Marcell Dareus, in just a moment. He's ready to unveil a new sack song. 5.5 sacks in each of his first two seasons with the Buffalo Bills, and Marcell Dareus says he's got the song in mind for when he gets a sack in the upcoming year. We'll take a break and come back and have Marcell Dareus in the studio with us. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live at One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
There it is, Mr. Big Stuff, the new sack song for the gentleman who joined us in studio right now, going into his third year with the Bills, defensive lineman Marcell Dareus. Mr. Big Stuff, that's what you want played when you get a sack this coming year, right?
Yeah, it's just an influential song. A lot of people get happy when they listen to it. It's just a nice song back in the day, and my friend used to play it for me, and my friend Calvin Lee played ball with me in Alabama, transferred out, but we always talk about that, and I just decided to bring it up to some of the guys here in Buffalo, and they said we might just roll with it.
So yeah,
I'm happy for it.
Roll with it. That's a 45-year-old song, I bet. I mean, that's really old school.
Yeah, my mom played music like that all the time around us, and my friend Calvin, we kind of had that in common. So Mr. Big Stuff was one of our songs, and I just asked about it. It's funny, but yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Did your mom play Motown records
for
you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. She just played all kind of music.
What were some of your favorites
out
of that?
Like Al Green and
all those guys
we used to listen to just growing up, just going to bed to it, waking up to it, all the time. There's a lot of old school stuff. Temptations are big.
Yeah. Do you ever go to Reverend Al Green's church in Memphis?
No, I haven't been.
You
to
heard
Memphis
about
yet.
This, right?
Yeah,
he does like a gospel soul mass in Memphis. I've been. It's pretty cool.
I haven't been to Memphis, cool. But I'd like to.
Oh, you got to get to Memphis. You'll love it there. Marcell Dareus in studio with us, the Bills defensive lineman, Mr. Big Stuff, and that you got a dance to go along with it too.
Yeah, a little something.
All right, we'll have to wait. There'll be sacks coming. 5.5 sacks in each of your first 2 years with the Buffalo Bills. What's the ceiling? Is that it, or do you got more in you, do you think?
I know that's not it. I'm just, you know, just waiting to reach my peak and just doing the best I can, giving all the effort that I can, and just waiting for everything just to work right, you know. And I can't go out there and demand them. Just go out here and do the best I can and try to get them, however many the Lord blessed me with.
Do you measure your effectiveness on sacks, or do you look at pressures when it comes to pass defense?
No, I look at my whole success as being disruptive. It's not all about numbers with me. I would do the little things that if somebody else made the play, just because I know I'm in a double team. I know I can grab a guy a little longer and he can get in there and make the play, whatever, hold the double team, not let the O-line move, whatever disrupts the offense, I'm all for it.
You had one of your most productive days the second to last game last year at Miami, a couple of sacks on Ryan Tannehill. What do you recall about that day? Was that maybe your best day in the league so far?
No, I want to look at it as my best day. It was just a work day, going out there doing what I do, just having fun with all the guys. And, you know, things just started turning around for me. It took me a lot to come out of my slump last year for the things that happened with my family. And I think the Patriots game was my coming out game when we went there. And I just kind of started picking it up from there and started picking up the pieces, and they kind of came together for me.
I don't want to dwell on that, but obviously the personal tragedy at home back in Alabama, that had to impact your whole mindset for, you know, quite a bit of last year, at least the first half of last year, I would think. Huh?
It's just tough to come back and then just really think about work when every time you turn around, you're losing something close to you.
Yeah.
And you really don't have a mother or father just to fall back on to talk to about situations. And just being the youngest man in the house now and just having to take on a lot of adults' responsibilities, and it's kind of just taking a toll on me that year, and just had to be a man and come back and finish the season hard and just suck it all up.
You came from a big family, the sixth of seven children, and you're the youngest now, right?
Yeah, I'm the youngest now.
What did you learn about your Buffalo Bills family last year, and even the fans, the way they embraced you after that trouble at the beginning of last year?
Man, it's just, man. I can't even explain it. It's just coming from home. I didn't expect it. Just the team rallied around me, man. They prayed for me and just prayed for strength to give me the wisdom to come through things. And it really meant a lot. And the fans, they had my back wholeheartedly. I had a lot of letters from a lot of kids, a lot of support. When I went and signed, a lot of fans came out and supported me and gave me letters around New Era at the building. It just really meant a lot to me. And Buffalo is my second home, and I look at it as my second home, always will be. It's just how it is here. They support each other, and I support them.
You hung with it. You continued to play. And as you said, your season got better. In fact, you finished it off with a blocked field goal in the Jets game, trying to steal some of Alex Carrington's thunder, apparently blocking field goals.
I mean, I don't look at it as trying to steal his thunder. I just wanted him to break the record for us, and I end up sliding in one. I'm only one of the season. I look at it as a blessing. It's lucky for me to get in there. He's snatching everything.
He got a lot. One thing that stands out, Marcel, in your first 2 years, you've never missed a game 2 years in. And not to, I don't want that to be a jinx, but that's pretty good to be that durable, and especially in the collision spot that you're in the middle of the defensive line.
I thought that was common.
Yeah, well, it's not for everybody.
I thought everybody's played a solid 2 years, you know.
Were you like that at Alabama? Did you miss much time at Alabama?
I haven't missed a game.
Really?
No. I haven't missed a legal game. I haven't missed a legal game in Alabama at all. Okay. Injury or nothing.
Keep that going. We're with Marcel Darius, Bills defensive lineman. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Knock on the Formica table here. A new coaching staff. Give me your impressions of this coaching staff here with the Buffalo Bills.
I love them, man. You know, they have a lot of new ideas for us. They came in and changed the organization in a great way. We had a lot of changes, you know, with ownership and everything. So it's just been a lot going on around here, and I like the scheme they have coming in. And I love Marone as a head coach, and I love Pettis as my D coordinator. I mean, we doing pretty good. I like what we got going on. I just can't wait to get it all together and get on the field and see how we go with these bullets flying.
Tell me about Anthony Weaver, who coaches your position group. What do you think?
Oh, man, I love this guy to death. He's a player's coach. He's not too long been out of the league. He understands what we're going through. He helps us out a great deal. Like, he walks with us through the plays. He shows us how to do things. I mean, I couldn't expect to have another coach come in like him. I never had a coach come in like him. Young, energetic, had a lot of ideas for us. I mean, I love him there.
Can you tell that he coaches, like, because of the way he played the game? The fact that he played, does that matter how he coaches you?
Man, you can tell he played with a lot of detail, a lot of versatility, and he can kind of tell us from each position how to run a play inside that defense, at that play, like it has a history and a life of his own. And for me, sit back and watching him do his work, and it's just I got a lot of respect for the guy.
Marcel, this defense, it appears, Mike Pettine's defense, has a lot of moving parts, a lot going on around you. Are you essentially playing a pretty much stationary position in there, kind of an anchor in the middle with all those moving parts around you?
You know, I can sit still with a lot of stuff moving at me, but, you know, they moving me around a little bit. We got a little things going on, you know. We kind of just just playing the defense as it is, trying to learn it. Got a lot of stuff going on, trying to occupy a lot of things and get a lot of things filled in. So we're still trying to fill the playbook out, still trying to get the thing under control. But I think we'll be okay, though.
You have not had Kyle Williams next to you yet in any of these spring practices. How much of a difference will that make when he finally lines up alongside
you? Man, it's going to be a great difference because Kyle is a coach in his own. He get a lot of mental reps, and it's like he hasn't missed a step. So I can't wait till he get back out there. I'm happy he got his surgery out the way. He's on a quick recovery, and he'll be ready to go when the season get here.
Just even today's practice, and they kind of wrapped up with that two-minute drill. There was a point in that two-minute drill where the defense got four sacks in a row, four straight plays. There was a lot of emotion about that. I could tell you guys were pretty excited about making those plays, even against your own offense.
Yeah, we kind of that's part of the different view of the Bills. We got an edge to us, and we want to do good, and we don't just bash each other. We pat each other on the back as well, but we're gonna show that we coming after each other, and we want you to do better. So that's just the competition level. That's where we're at right now. So that's what we pushing to. That's what we're looking for as a team, as a unit.
What are your goals? We talked about 5.5 sacks, but what are you looking to get done this year, both individually and as a team?
I mean, individually, I never have individual goals. It's always whatever the Lord blessed me with, that's what I'm going to go with. But I just want to do the best we can, whatever it takes for me to get our team over that hump, whatever they need me to do, that's what I'm here for. That's what you drafted me for. I can play any position. I can do anything they want me to do.
You're right back here tomorrow morning for the final mini camp session. Do you think guys will be focused, or I mean, do people want to get out? And you know, you got a couple weeks off now. Looking ahead to camp,
we want to win.
Yeah, can't win any games tomorrow.
We want to win. We're not really worried about. I mean, we know we get a good break off, but you know, at the same time, we still have tomorrow, and we're gonna get the most of what we can get out tomorrow, and live for that, and then whatever after that, we'll see it in camp.
All right. Well, we're hearing this song, I'm sure. We're going to hear this song a couple of times this year, Mr. Big Stuff. It's going to be Marcel Darius' sax song, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing this a couple of times. Nice choice. It's for old guys like me. I can identify with it. Great.
It's appealing to everybody.
Yeah, it appeals to me. Thanks, Marcel. Thanks for coming.
No problem.
In. Marcel Darius, Bills defensive lineman. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
So, there it is for Marcel Darius, Mr. Big Stuff. Mr. Big Stuff, that's going to be his sax song today. I think it's kind of cool that a guy as young as Marcel goes all the way back to the 70s to come up with a song like that, Russ. I think it shows a little initiative on his part. He didn't, you know what I mean?
Good taste, too.
Yeah. This is Marcel Darius' sax song. You heard him say it just moments ago on the show. Mr. Big Stuff. Who's the artist, Russ?
Gene Knight.
Who do you think you are?
No idea. I believe she is not a relation to Gladys.
I think we looked that up, yep. We okay play music on the show for a while?
I mean, the song's, what, 4 minutes long? Let's just let it go.
Take us right to the break. No, I'm just kidding. Good for Marcel, though, and he's always fun. And the answer, you know, we had the caller a minute ago before Marcel was on the air about, is this the year? Is this the breakthrough year? Very well could be when you look at what he went through last year, early on in the year, when he had that tragedy at home in Alabama when his youngest brother was killed. And, yeah, I would think it very well could be a breakthrough year for Marcel Darius. We appreciate him taking the time to come by the studio with us tonight. We're going to talk about Tim Tebow in the next hour with Nathan Whitaker, who wrote a book with Tebow, Through My Eyes, Tebow's autobiography that came out a couple of years ago. Going to try to find out what makes Tebow tick. And we're also going to get an update on Tebow's former team, the New York Jets, from Eric Allen of Jets.com. But we do have time for your phone calls, and we pose this question at the top of the hour. Who is the face of the franchise here with the Buffalo Bills? Who is it? Who is the guy who anybody would look at the Bills and say, oh, the Buffalo Bills, that's who blank plays for? Is it C.J. Spiller? Is it Stevie Johnson? Is it Mario Williams? Is it E.J. Manuel? Is it Doug Marrone, the new head coach? Got a couple of callers early on this hour, a couple people settling on C.J. Spiller as the face of the franchise. If you have thoughts on that, give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We got some tweets on this as well. Including one from Lance Nagel, who says, Stevie Johnson, definitely the face of the franchise right now. He gets the most pub and promotes the Bills in all he does. Rob Wallace tweets in, I would say Stevie Johnson is the face of the Bills for all the wrong reasons, though. I don't know about wrong reasons. He puts hashtag why so serious. I mean, people know about Stevie because of his flamboyance, because of his run-ins with the touchdown celebrations, why so serious, etc. Happy New Year, all of that stuff. But I don't know if those are the wrong reasons. He's a very good player, obviously. Is he the face of the franchise, Stevie Johnson? He just might be. Tom Gugino says Stevie is the face of the Bills as far as national recognition goes. You know, I would agree with the earlier tweeter tonight who said right now the Bills are in that group of faceless franchises. It's up to E.J. Manuel to change that going forward. I think that's where I settle. I know that obviously Stevie is well known and promotes himself very well and has fun doing it. C.J. Spiller, very well known based on his breakout year last year. Mario Williams, well known for his big contract and his record of production before he came to Buffalo with the Houston Texans. Doug Marrone, known in some quarters as a hot coaching prospect who now coaches the Buffalo Bills. But I would agree with the earlier tweet that the Bills are in the group of teams that really don't have a well-defined face of the franchise. And they're not alone, by the way. I mean, people always say there's no identity. You know, most teams who don't win don't have identity because they're too busy trying to win, trying to change the chemistry, trying to change the cast of characters. That's why you don't have an identity if you're switching coaches every 3 years or out searching for a quarterback every couple of years. You don't have an identity. And in this case, you don't have a face of the franchise. I think the Bills belong to that group, unfortunately, based on the last 13 years, searching for an identity, searching for a face. And I think there's a pretty good chance that E.J. Manuel could wind up being that guy. If not this year, then into the future. People know Stevie. People know C.J. Spiller. A lot of people know Mario Williams. But I do think we still are in the hunt for a face of the franchise for the Buffalo Bills. And they are not alone. I would challenge you to tell me who the face of the Dolphins franchise is. Is it really Ryan Tannehill? I don't think so. Can you name their head coach, Philbin? Not many could. Who's the face of the New York Jets franchise? Probably Rex Ryan, for better or worse. And in this case right now, it looks like for worse. Who's the face of, you know, any number of teams? Who's the face of the Cincinnati Bengals? Andy Dalton? Marvin Lewis? I don't know. I mean, some teams, it's pretty well defined. I would argue that Atlanta, you would say Matt Ryan, face of the franchise. Green Bay, you'd say Aaron Rodgers. Seattle, Russell Wilson. San Francisco, Colin Kaepernick. A lot of these quarterbacks, obviously. We talked about Baltimore, Ray Lewis, longtime face of the franchise. But I think there's a select few teams that have one guy who you know he is the face of the franchise. When you see Colin Kaepernick, you think 49ers. Or when you think Seattle, you think Russell Wilson. I don't think the Bills have that guy just yet. And I think there are most teams in the league are like that. Oakland, Arizona, who's the face of their franchise? St. Louis Rams. Is it Sam Bradford? Is he the face of their franchise? Maybe. I think most teams don't have him, and they're looking for him. Most of the time, you're looking for a quarterback to be the face and the leader of your franchise, and the Bills still remain in search of that. I think it's an interesting question, though. We'll get back to question or answers on this. If you have thoughts on this, you can tweet them in. Just follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. You can call them in, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. There's no question a lot of people know the face of Tim Tebow. He is now a quarterback, third-string quarterback for the New England Patriots. And our guest coming up after the top of the hour, Nathan Whitaker, wrote a book with Tim Tebow called Through My Eyes about his journey to the NFL. We'll talk with Nathan Whitaker when we return about what makes Tebow tick. What kind of a guy is he? How's he going to handle Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the Patriots? That's coming up after the break. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's coming to the house. He's doing it again. My man, touchdown Buffalo.
Man, you should hang out. You should go fishing again.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
I don't know what we're yelling about.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the John Murphy Show, coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Day two of the mini camp today. One more day to come tomorrow. We've had the update. Talked about that a lot in the first hour. We'll talk about it more during the upcoming hour as the Bills continue in their minicamp. A lot of teams in the NFL in minicamp mode right now. No one more so, getting more attention anyway, than the New England Patriots after the move on Monday in which they signed free agent quarterback Tim Tebow. On the line with us, a man who knows Tim Tebow pretty well. He wrote Tebow's autobiography with him, the book Through My Eyes, author Tim Tebow, and our guest, Nathan Whitaker, on the line with us from his home. Nathan, thank you very much for coming on the air. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Let me start this way, and we're going to go deeper into this, but just in general, what makes Tim Tebow tick?
You know, he's a really driven young man. His dad told the story about when Tim was five and the rest of the family is sitting around watching a sitcom or something, and Tim's in the back of the room doing exercises, trying to strengthen his shoulder. And his older brothers are looking at him going, you got to be kidding me. What's the five-year-old doing? that Tim just has always been interested in whatever it takes to compete with his brothers, and then as he got older with other people.
And so what you indicate is that he's pretty much always been this way, right, since he was a young kid?
He has, and his parents, in some respects, just tried to get out of the way and let him develop, and in fact had to hold him back at times where he was wanting to work out with weights like his older brothers, and his dad barred him from doing that until he was a teenager. He's a very driven young man.
What are his parents like, Nathan?
Well, you know, they're missionaries, and so they went back and forth to the Philippines a lot and lived on a farm in Jacksonville, and both University of Florida grads, and so are just very down-to-earth folks who were just raising a bunch of kids. They had five children, Tim being the youngest, and then all of a sudden kind of found that they had this incredible athlete on their hands.
Do you believe, Nathan, in that theory of, like, birth order, and did that somehow impact Tebow being the youngest of five, do you think?
Well, you know, I only have two children myself, so I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to that, but he certainly does seem to have always been trying to keep up with his brothers. And there was enough of a gap that they were always kind of able to have their way in whatever game they were playing, but not so much of a gap that he didn't feel like he could catch up. So he was always trying to achieve whatever he could with respect to his brothers, that's for sure.
The spirituality is a big issue with Tim Tebow. In fact, I don't know if you saw today, Nathan, the owner of the Patriots, Bob Kraft, said Tebow's spirituality actually attracted the Patriots to him. Do you think that's been the case throughout his career, that people love the fact that he is a good person who has a spiritual component?
Well, I certainly think that's been a part of the fans' reaction to him, and I think that, to some extent, with respect to his teammates, I don't know if that's had any impact. You know, Tim's kind of a dichotomy in that he can be so sensitive and gentle and the like, but then when people think, well, a Christian's supposed to behave in a certain way, and he lowers his shoulder and takes somebody out in the middle of the field, that's not necessarily what people are expecting. You know, he certainly is very genuine and a really good guy to be around. And so I think that is appealing to a lot of folks.
I wonder if, that brings to mind this question. How important is football to Tim Tebow?
I think it's really important. I think he really, he views himself in the bigger picture of, why he's here and what he's trying to accomplish. And you mentioned a minute ago the faith aspects. But at the end of the day, he really enjoys playing football. And I think that's a really big deal to Tim. And so I think he's made a lot of decisions in life as to what the best situation will be for him, what the best place he could learn. You know, he talked about he really liked Alabama, really liked Mike Shula, really liked a lot of things about Coach Shula and the fact that they were praying with their players at Alabama at that time. And he said, but at the end of the day, I thought Urban Meyer could help me figure out a way to win a championship.
Interesting.
And so he's really been looking at how do I maximize my ability? How do I make this football thing last as long as I can?
So it's not a case where, like, Tim Tebow plays football in order to further this other agenda, this spiritual agenda, this Christianity agenda that he might have. That's not the case, you're saying?
Well, I don't think so. In that, you know, I'm reminded of the, this is going to show my age, but Chariots of Fire.
Sure.
And the runner, Eric Little, said something like, you know, God gave me, I get pleasure when I run. I think God created me as a runner. And I think Tim would tell you that the two things are inseparable, that there is this aspect of playing football as his life's work, but he just really enjoys it. He just really feels like he's wired that way.
I don't get the sense either, Nathan, and I'm just watching from afar. I never really noticed Tebow pushing his spirituality. If he's asked about it, he'll talk about it. He certainly has, you know, a record of doing good things, good deeds, but it's not like he pushes it. It doesn't seem like he pushes it to the point where people get uncomfortable, do you think?
That's never been my experience with him. He has, I would tend to completely agree with you. You know, his experiences, and I would just limit it to the ones I know best were his experiences at the University of Florida, where he had a lot of teammates who were believers, some who were not. Some of the guys he was toughest on were some of the believers who he felt like weren't carrying their load. And then at the other, on the other hand, there were guys who completely didn't believe the same way he did. And with Tim, that was okay. In fact, some of his roommates, they were just on a different page than he was. And that's okay. He'll take them where they are and do his thing, and they can do theirs. And so it's important to him, but he doesn't. He's very, I think he's very good in how he approaches it.
Talking with author Nathan Whitaker, he wrote with Tim Tebow the book Through My Eyes a couple of years ago, Tebow's autobiography, with our guest Nathan Whitaker. How has Tebow changed, do you think, since he wrote that book, Nathan?
Well, I don't know if he has. You know, so many of the things we talked about when he was doing it, you know, it was all kind of up in the air. We were starting the book right after the draft, and it started, you know, in a time where, as we started to work on it, he didn't know if he'd be drafted at all. And if so, would it be in the sixth round or the third or the first? And so then as it developed, you know, would he ever get a chance to play over Kyle Orton in Denver? And then we kind of wrapped up the book about the time that he was starting those last three games of his rookie year, but he didn't know what would happen that next year. And it's always been a sense of gratitude for things that have progressed as far as they have. I mean, he was thrilled with the chance to do what he had done. And at every point when somebody would say, hey, I don't think he's good enough to do whatever's next, he would just kind of buckle down and figure out what he had to do to get better and prove folks wrong if necessary. So I don't know if that's changed. I do know the poor guy cannot get out of the limelight.
Yeah.
And I think that's, to me, that's been tough. And I think New England should be a good spot for that, because I don't see them allowing that to continue, and I'll be glad for him to just kind of have a chance to learn their system and maybe be out of the eye of everything for a while.
You think being in the limelight, the harsh limelight the last year or so, has hurt Tim Tebow a little bit?
Well, I think playing quarterback in the NFL is so hard.
Yeah.
There's just so much to it, and you know, you had that clip earlier about Kevin trying to learn Coach Marone's offense and figure out everything Tim's done. He's been in what, three systems in 3 years, or four systems in 3 years, and everything has been, every single throw he makes in practice or in a game has been scrutinized, and there's really not just been a kind of a chance to learn and to develop and to make some mistakes without everybody looking at everything you do.
Our guest is author Nathan Whitaker. He wrote with Tim Tebow the book Through My Eyes. Nathan, we should point out that you also have some NFL experience. You worked in the player personnel departments of the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Did you ever look with that critical eye at Tim Tebow as a quarterback, as a passer? Did you ever sort of in your own mind evaluate him as an NFL prospect?
You know, I didn't really. I was a lawyer, a salary cap guy.
Right.
And so they let me do some scouting, but I think they shredded all my reports, being a lawyer and stuff. It was to make me feel good. I didn't really, because at that point I was really more I was in the role of being an advocate for Tim and to work on his book. So I've tried to be objective, and I've heard what people have said, but at the end of the day, I'm just kind of pulling for him and hoping that he figures out whatever and ends up in a good spot.
Do you think it's valid criticism when people talk about, you know, some people go as far to say he, you know, is not an NFL caliber passer?
Well, you know, I it just feels early to me. I mean, given the number of systems he's been in, I don't hear, there's been some talk about Blaine Gabbert to that extent, but not as strongly as with Tim. And, you know, Gabbert was drafted higher than Tim and has gotten a chance, and people are still, you know, well, maybe Gabbert will work out this year. And he's had some really tough moments in Jacksonville. Yet people have not tried to opine whether Tim's done or is capable or whatever. I mean, whether Blaine is, the way they have with Tim. So it just feels, it all feels premature to me. So it would be nice if Tim could just be in a spot where he could learn and grow and develop, and we'll see what comes along.
Why do you think he is the focus of so much attention and in many respects a lightning rod for people for and against Tim Tebow?
You know, I think he's been, I just think, as you touched on earlier, the faith aspect, the fact that so many people just really like the guy. And that's what I told people as I said, as I was working on this, I said, you know, whether you're a Florida fan, whether you're a Tim Tebow fan, at the end of the day, if you sat in a room with him, you would really like the guy. And yet I think that as people have embraced him, there's just been that pushback. And we've seen it in the NBA Finals where, you know, if the Heat are too successful or the Spurs, they win too much, well, people decide they're not a Spurs fan because the Spurs win all the time. I think there's some of that where we get this media pushback or pushback when folks are embraced by the media and the like, and others just decide, well, I really don't feel like hearing about him anymore.
Yeah. I want Nathan, do you think he was upset that Denver, you know, gave up on him after a year? I mean, obviously there were other circumstances with Peyton Manning going there, but do you think he was embittered almost that after what he did with the Broncos that they gave up?
Yeah, I don't know if embittered might be strong, but I really think he thought he was going to enter into that whole thing with Coach Fox out there with a chance to really kind of be the long-term answer, or at least have a chance to show that he is. And I think there was that thought as he entered into that that off season and then the year in which they won all those games in ridiculous fashion, that he thought, hey, we're all going to kind of grow together in this. And of course, that wasn't to be. So embittered may be strong, but I think that wasn't the way he thought it was going to shape up.
Embittered, he wouldn't be embittered because of the way he is, or it just didn't warrant that sort of reaction.
Yeah, in my times with him, he just didn't strike me as the type to be embittered. He's very forward looking. You know, one of the things that I've had ingrained in me from my time that I've spent with Tony Dungy is Tony's always saying, you know, what am I going to do to make the situation better? And he's always looking ahead. And Tim's very similar to that. In that, hey, you know, whatever's happened has happened. Now, where do I go from here?
And what do you think Tebow thought of last year, the Jets, the media circus that accompanied his time with the New York Jets, and really the dysfunction it appeared from the outside looking in, and what was going on the field and in the locker room there with the New York Jets? What do you think Tebow thought of that?
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I'll be, you know, honest. We didn't discuss that
right
in any real way. So, but again, to just kind of speculate based on kind of how he is, I do think that that had to be disappointing. That you know, I know when we were talking when he was in Denver, and Kyle Orton was starting in his rookie year, and he was saying, look, there are certain things I can do to help. I mean, whether they want me to start or not, there are certain things I can do that will help us. And I know he had to be thinking the same thing in New York, that whether it was short yarded situations or other places on the field, I know it had to be disappointing to what was he, 6 of 8 passing?
Yeah.
And to just not have any other opportunities.
And now he finds himself with the Patriots. You've already talked about how the atmosphere there might be more conducive to him just settling down and learning not what it takes to be an NFL quarterback. But if you can just, again, put your player personnel experience to work, what do you think the best way for the Patriots to use him would be, knowing that they've got a future Hall of Fame quarterback, number one of the depth chart there?
Right. Well, you know, selfishly, again, this is the best scenario where nobody in their right mind is going to take out a billboard and want Tom Brady benched. So that should totally take the pressure off them and everybody else.
They might do that in Buffalo, by the way.
Right. Well, yes, anything to get Tom Brady benched,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
But I think that'll be good for Tim. And then the other thing that I really like about Coach Belichick is that whether it's Mike Vrabel or whether it's some of their receivers that they put as DBs when the situation warranted it, he will find ways in which he can use guys' abilities. Some of the things we thought maybe were going to happen in New York last year. And I don't know if he'll do this, but I could totally see him finding packages beyond just a wildcat or something where he thinks, you know what, here's a guy who can help me. Here's a football player, a guy who loves football, and I can put him in whatever the situation is. And so I think Tim will embrace that.
Last thing, Nathan, I read an article you wrote earlier on this year about Tim Tebow. Obviously, you know him from writing the book with him. He, in your words, he really relishes being a role model. He's almost the anti-Charles Barkley in that respect. He is aware of the fact that people are watching, and he makes a point of doing the right thing, right? Is that how you describe the way his public persona is handled?
Absolutely. And, you know, and I was with him at one point early on in his career. We were in Denver, and he played a voice message that he had just gotten from his mom before a game, and the message was along the lines of, you know, Timmy, I know you're not going to play this week, but I just want to encourage you and remind you that there are a bunch of kids in the stands who are going to watch everything you do as you walk up and down the sideline. And his family has helped him. He's always been very mindful of that, that for better or worse, people are going to be watching him, and that he can either have a positive impact or a negative, but the odds are he's not going to have no impact at all.
I root for him, Nathan. You probably do, too. You know him, you know, pretty well. But I'm in the group that roots for, I know it's sometimes it looks like, you know, the nation is split right down the middle. But I root for him. I see no reason why not to root for a guy who seems like this good a guy and has that kind of production in his past. Why not root for Tim Tebow, huh?
I agree. No, I think there are a lot of folks like you who you know, wish him the best. And I certainly hope that it works out for him.
Nathan, thanks for coming on the air with us tonight to talk about it. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mark.
Author Nathan Whitaker, who wrote the book Through My Eyes with Tim Tebow, his autobiography, came out a couple of years ago. It is in paperback and available at Amazon.com. Nathan Whitaker, who has also written books with Tony Dungy, Quiet Strengths, The Principles of Tony Dungy, and a couple of other books. Tim Tebow, I find him to be fascinating. And you know, ESPN kills it for a lot of us because they go over the top in the Tim Tebow coverage. I mean, they just go crazy with what they did last year at Jets training camp in Cortland, setting up shop there. I do think, based on 2 days now with the Patriots camp, mini camp, it appears that the Patriots will keep that under control. You know, Belichick today asked about Tebow, was not going to talk about it. So we're not going to talk about Tim Tebow every day. That's probably the way to go. And as Nathan points out, based on his observation, this is a guy who needs just a chance to learn one system, to settle in one system, and to find his place in the NFL. 3 years in, three different teams, three different offenses, three different roles, at least two different roles with the Patriots role pending. I do think he probably would benefit from some quiet time and a chance to find his place, whatever it might be, with the New England Patriots without so much intense coverage. It looks, I have not read the book, but it looks like a pretty good book. Tim Tebow, Through My Eyes. Tim Tebow writes it with a guy we just heard from, Nathan Whitaker. All right, we'll take a break. We're going to check in with Tim Tebow's former team. Eric Allen of Jets.com will join us to talk about how they picked up the pieces since Tebow left. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Well, our thanks to Nathan Whitaker for joining us, talking about Tim Tebow. I don't know. I know, you know, people get tired of the coverage. He doesn't generate the coverage. He doesn't generate, you know, I don't know why. I don't know why there's so much negativity about him. Let's see what happens. Hey, we want to remind you, you can enter to win the Father's Day gift pack from the Bills store right now. All you got to do is go to BuffaloBills.com and click on the Father's Day segment there. It's a Father's Day gift pack that includes a polo shirt, some golf balls, some golf tees, a tie, a golf club cover, an autographed mini helmet. All you got to do is just give us your name and email address, submit the form, and maybe you win. The Father's Day gift pack, available at BuffaloBills.com. Also available at BuffaloBills.com these days right now is press conferences from today from Mike Pettine, the Bills defense coordinator, and Nathaniel Hackett, offensive coordinator. So you can check that out, BuffaloBills.com. If you're interested in the Bills opponents, you can always check out NewYorkJets.com. And on the line with us, the senior reporter for Jets.com, a Western New York native, Eric Allen. Eric, thanks very much for coming on with us tonight.
Murph, thanks very much for having me.
I forgot. You reminded me before we got you on the air, you actually worked in the radio booth with myself and Van Miller a long time ago, 13 years ago down in Tampa, huh?
Yeah, back in 2000. I got my start with the Buccaneers, and I did stats with you guys up in the booth, and as you just recalled, a number of Bills injuries during that game, right around Thanksgiving time, I remember.
Yeah, I remember getting on the bus, and with the injuries they had, with the nature of the loss, it was a terrible bus ride to the Tampa airport at the end of that game. You knew that the season had taken a dramatic turn for the worse that day, right then, that game. Hey, Eric, tell me about NewYorkJets.com, and you guys are right in the midst of your minicamp this week as well, right? The mandatory minicamp for the Jets players.
Yeah, that's right, Murph. Day two, and then tomorrow is it. One more minicamp practice, and these guys will go their separate ways. The rookies will stick around, but then the players will report up to SUNY Cortland on July 25th. Right now, much like I think you guys are reporting on in Western New York, similarities with these teams as far as the quarterback position, where Kevin Cobb is a new veteran, I guess you would say, with the Bills. You got Mark Sanchez here entering his fifth season in a quarterback competition with a rookie quarterback in Geno Smith, who was selected number 39 overall. Only weeks, Murph, essentially, after a lot of people thought Geno Smith was going to be the number one overall pick in the draft.
Yeah, that was something. He lasted into the second round. Speaking of the draft, Eric, back to the first round for a second. The report up here, and it was mostly speculation, was that the Jets really were eyeballing Tavon Austin, the speedy wide receiver out of West Virginia, and the Bills made sure they wouldn't get him by making that trade, picking up a extra second rounder, and St. Louis got him. Was that the case? Do you think the Jets really had their eye on Tavon Austin?
I think a lot of teams probably had their eyes on Tavon Austin. In a draft that was void of playmakers at the top of the draft, I think a lot of teams were looking at Tavon, an electrifying performer at West Virginia, who I think St. Louis is going to use him in a plethora of ways to get him the football. But with that being said, I think the Jets were very happy to get the best cornerback in this draft class, and Dean Milner from Alabama, only 4 days after they traded Darrell Revis to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then four picks later, after getting Dean Milner, they took defensive tackle Sheldon Richardson from Missouri. So I think they were really happy with the way the board fell in this draft. Milner figures to come right in and join the competition at cornerback. And even after the Jets traded away Darrell Revis, they're actually loaded at the cornerback position heading into the 2013 season.
And, of course, Geno Smith in the second round. I read that on day one of Jets minicamp yesterday that Sanchez got, what, virtually all the first-team reps at quarterback? Is that right, Eric?
Yeah, that's true, Murph. But today, Geno Smith got the first-team reps. So the Jets have been flip-flopping. The thing about it is, the media was only allowed out to three of the team's 10 OTA sessions. So during those times, each of those three times, Mark Sanchez was working with the ones. And the first day of minicamp, Sanchez was working with the ones. But today, Geno Smith was working with the ones. And I talked to Rex Ryan about it today. I talked to Marty Morningweg about it today. And as you guys know, in Western New York, you had David Lee there last year. He talked about the quarterback today. There's no separation right now. I would say right now you're looking at a dead heat as we head to Cortland.
So it is wide open, the quarterback competition for the Jets.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I think it depends who you talk to, Murph. You talk to different people who cover this team every day, and some people would favor Mark Sanchez considering his experience. And other people could look at it and say, hey, Sanchez turned the ball over 52 times over the last two seasons, which led the National Football League. And Geno Smith got a fascinating skill set. He played that spread attack at West Virginia, so it's definitely going to be a big-time transition playing on the West Coast attack under Marty Morningweg. But he's got a big arm. He can run. The big thing they're working on with Geno right now is the footwork, because, like I said, everything at West Virginia was a lot of quick stuff, and they were operating out of the gun all the time.
And I read where Rex Ryan at least opened the door today to a special package of plays, maybe for Geno Smith, some read option type plays for Geno Smith, maybe in the Jets offense.
Right. We've seen a lot of success with that in the National Football League with a lot of the young quarterbacks. We think about Russell Wilson last year and Robert Griffin III. The Bills drafted somebody, E.J. Manuel, probably can do that himself. What Rex was specifically asked, hey, if Mark Sanchez won the starting job, would you consider using Geno to do some read option stuff? And Rex said he would consider it. Definitely, that doesn't mean that Sanchez has a leg up in the competition or anything like that. But they've used Geno here in the spring and the summer doing some of the read option stuff.
Talking with Eric Allen, he is senior reporter for NewYorkJets.com about the Jets minicamp, which goes on this week. You know, it occurs to me, Eric, that regardless of how this shakes out, and regardless of what you think of how Mark Sanchez is as a player, his strength certainly has been tested the last couple of years. I mean, Sanchez has put up with a lot of distraction, a lot of uncertainty about his status on the roster. I mean, there were some people who didn't think he'd be on the roster at this point going into this year, right?
Yeah. Hey, listen, let's be honest. It's a tough market. The Sanchez came in. The Jets traded up for him a few years back in those first 2 years in the National Football League. He's appearing in the AFC Championship game in consecutive years. Now the Jets had great defenses, excellent defenses in both of those years. But Sanchez really hit a high point of his career in 2010 when the Jets went on the road and they beat Peyton Manning and the Colts. And then the following week in the divisional playoffs, they took down Tom Brady and the Patriots. And I never, to this point, I hadn't seen Sanchez played better than that in his career. A lot of high expectations that third season, and the Jets had a disappointing 8-8 season. And then last year, it was a team that really couldn't afford any injuries, Murph. And then when Santonio Holmes, who was their most dynamic playmaker, goes out in week four with that Liz Frank injury, the Jets just could not overcome that. And then you couple that with Dustin Keller, who was Sanchez's security blanket. He played about half of the games last year. So the Jets were really missing a lot of playmakers, and you saw that as far as the passing offense struggle. And Mark definitely, and I'll tell you this, he pressed at times last year, and you saw that in the turnovers. And, you're going to hear a lot of fans right now who want to turn the page, would like to see Geno Smith take over right now. And other fans are saying, hey, listen, we got to surround this guy with some players like they've done previously in his first 2 years in the league when there were a lot of playmakers on the field, and see what he can do.
New coordinators on each side of the ball for the New York Jets going into the season, Eric. And do the systems change dramatically?
Not at all, Murph, on defense. You guys got a good one. The Bills got a good one. And Mike Patton, who did a tremendous job here with Rex Ryan over the past 4 years. But the person who takes over is Dennis Thurman, who was the Jets' secondary coach the past four seasons. And actually, Rex is getting even more involved in the defense this year. So what you see from the Jets is the same kind of thing you saw the past few seasons, which is the same kind of the things you're hearing over there in Western New York. Multiple fronts, a lot of pressure on the quarterback, disguises, overloading blitzes. That's not going to change. On the other side of the ball, it's completely new because Marty Mornowick comes up, I-95 from Philadelphia, had a lot of success with the Eagles, and he brings that West Coast offense, and they're just going to put the ball in the air a little bit. That doesn't mean they're going to go away from the run completely. But I think it's safe to say the ground and pound is dead. You're not going to hear that term a lot, I think, anymore with the Jets and Marty Mornowick. And one thing they're going to do with the running back, in addition to obviously handing the ball off to some of these guys, which I think this is one of the strengths of this team when you look at the Jets' backfield. But Marty Mornowick is going to pass the ball to the backs out of the backfield, and that's something you really didn't see last season.
Eric, are the Jets team on the rise or on the decline, or where would you put them, especially in the picture of the AFC East with the, you know, we all know the Patriots have ruled the roost for a long time, but where would you put the Jets in relation to the Dolphins and Bills these days?
To the Dolphins and Bills, I would say the Jets are a team in transition, and I think it's like the Bills. We're going to have to see what Miami has in store for everybody this year. I know a lot of people are high on the Dolphins, but you and I both know that a lot of these teams that have gone out and spent a lot of money in free agency in years past, it really didn't turn out in a lot more victories the following season. I think the Jets have improved defensively here in the offseason because you just got to consider they basically did not have Darrell Revis for the whole season last year as it was. I think it's a faster defense. I think they got better in the front seven, adding Sheldon Richardson. They bring in a guy like Antoine Barnes who can bring some pressure off the edge and some sub packages. Like I said, cornerback, a lot of depth there. The big question for this team, going forward is, are they going to be able to score the points, Murph? Because I think they're solid at the offensive line position and the running back position, but Santonio Holmes is still rehabbing from that Liz Frank injury. He wants to be back by training camp, but, it's too early to say when is he going to be back. And just early on in minicamp, we've seen a lot of drops from the receivers. And who's going to step up on the outside? And also, who's going to step up at the tight end position? Because the Jets just went out and signed Kellen Winslow Jr., and it's going to be interesting to see if his health can hold up, because here's a guy who's had 438 career receptions, but the Jets need production from both of those positions. And then lastly, and the most important position in all of football, who's going to win the starting job at quarterback and how productive are they going to be?
All those questions sounds kind of familiar to any Bills fan, I would think, Eric. We don't know, right? We don't know. That's why we pay attention so closely.
Yeah, Murph, I think it's going to be interesting. You
me
know,
too.
We all know that the Patriots have dominated this division, and on paper, they're definitely odds-on favorite once again. And I'm going to be fascinated to see this mix with the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Jets, because I don't know if Miami is really separating themselves from the other two.
I hear you. Eric, thanks. Good catching up with you. Thanks for coming on the show with us.
Thanks so much, Murph.
Eric Allen, senior reporter for NewYorkJets.com, does a lot of internet programming down there as well and writes about the Jets in their minicamp. A Western New York native of Orchard Park. We thank him for coming on the show with us tonight. Well, we talked a lot tonight about the face of the franchise. Who's the face of the Buffalo Bills franchise? Got anybody in mind? Is it E.J. Manuel? Is it C.J. Spiller? Stevie Johnson? Mario Williams? Who do you think would be the face of the franchise if you're an NFL fan and somebody says to you, Buffalo Bills, name one. Who's the first one you name? Let us know what you think. We've got time for phone calls after the break. 803-0550, the number toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We're here live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Couple of minutes left here, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Our thanks again to Eric Allen for getting us up to date on the New York Jets. Always interesting there, and they've got a full-blown quarterback competition there, as we appear to have here. Talking tonight about the face of the franchise, who is it? Who is the face of the Buffalo Bills franchise? Phone lines open for your nominations for that. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or if you want to do it via Twitter, you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Larry Sheldon tweets in, I feel to have a face of the franchise, you need to be a perennial winner, like Smith, Thomas, and Kelly were. I think you're right. Maybe not perennial, but you need to have success, I think, to have an established face of the franchise. You may disagree. Maybe there's a face of the franchise in your mind right now. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550. Here's one from Zach Quinn who says, highest paid player, hard not to recognize in football, Mario Williams. He thinks he's the face of the Bills franchise. Let's take a call. Here is Butch on the east side of Buffalo. Hello, Butch.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. Listen,
sure.
I just really want to call real fast. First of all, you always have a great show, and I thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
John, when the draft came and we picked up E.J. Manuel, I always said in the third or fourth round, I would think based on our quarterback situation, we would pick another quarterback. But after looking at the move they did with Tavarius Jackson, it seems to me I might get my wish after all. That Jeff Toole might be just that good to be a backup quarterback and then one day be a second-string quarterback behind Manuel. That way we can always solidify that position for years to come. And I'm kind of intrigued by that based on the move they made so early with Tavares Jackson. But I'm happy on that note. And last but not least, John, with the way Patrick said about Patton Fryers being a defensive coordinator and glad to be on our side, I just hope they make him assistant head coach to the point where no other team would try to get him, because I think with that talent we got on defense, a lot of teams at the end of the season are going to want to get him. Thanks, John, for taking my call, and have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Butch. Yeah, and good points. I don't know if they're going to make Patton assistant head coach soon anyway. And, of course, this team has yet to play a game. But, the defense looks pretty interesting so far. There's no question about that. And the defense had a great day today, really. No other word for it. They played outstanding today against the offense in today's minicamp workout. Only minicamp. No pads, by the way. Speaking of the quarterback competition, we got a couple of interesting guests tomorrow. One of them we just kind of contacted late today. He is the quarterback guru who worked with E.J. Manuel in Florida leading up to the draft. Ken Mastroli. He runs a Mastroli Passing Academy in Florida, several different sites in South Florida. I believe he's based in Naples, Florida. Worked with E.J. Manuel extensively leading up to the draft. In fact, he was given a lot of credit for getting Manuel ready for his Senior Bowl appearance and then the Combine in particular. Which is maybe, you know, EJ, I think, by all accounts, is one of those guys whose draft stock rose pretty dramatically from the end of his college football season to the draft itself, to the point where the Bills made him, the middle of the first round pick there. We're going to talk with Ken Mastroli about EJ Manuel, talk with him about what he did for EJ during the time they worked together this past year, and about what he does for quarterbacks down there at the Mastroli Passing Academy. I passed EJ Manuel in the hallway today, told him we had the guest on, and I said, EJ, probably going to talk about you. And he said, yeah, okay. I think he's all right with that. Also tomorrow night on the show, Kevin Connors, ESPN SportsCenter anchor, Ithaca College, former basketball star at Ithaca College, and a huge Buffalo Bills fan. We're going to get a national take on the Bills from Kevin Connors from ESPN. You see him on SportsCenter all the time. So that's what's coming up tomorrow. We will wrap up the day of minicamp tomorrow as well. If you're looking for highlights from today's minicamp, it is up right now at BuffaloBills.com. Click on Bills Roundup. You can see the press conferences from Patton and Nathaniel Hackett, but you can also see some of the plays from today's minicamp workout. Just go to BuffaloBills.com and click on Bills Roundup. Chris Brown and I, mostly Chris, put together the recap of today's minicamp practice with some of the highlights, including those four consecutive sacks, some of the spectacular interceptions we talked about, and a couple of nice plays for the Buffalo Bills offense. Buffalo Bills Roundup at BuffaloBills.com. It's up there right now. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO. Family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. We want to thank Marcel Darius, Mr. Big Stuff, who joined us in studio during the 7 o'clock hour. Want to thank Nathan Whitaker, who wrote the book with Tim Tebow, Through My Eyes, his take on Tebow in New England. And, of course, Eric Allen, who we just finished up with from NewYorkJets.com. Our engineer tonight, Pete Cargis, our producer, the maestro, Russ Burton, Bills director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. Back on the air tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.